Hello, and welcome to our podcast series Inside Impact Investing. My name is Rosel Veldmeijer. I'm fund manager at Triodos Investment Management. And together with experts from the field, I'm diving into current hot topics within the impact investing industry. Today's topic is impact performance reporting, which I will discuss with my colleague Rebecca Sporer and Mike McCrellis. Rebecca works as an impact manager here at Triodos Investment Management, and Mike is executive director at Impact Frontiers, an organization which facilitates peer learning communities and creates practical tools that support investors in managing impact and integrating impact with financial data, analysis, and processes. As Mike is based in the US, he's joining us remotely for this podcast. And just so I don't forget, the podcast is a nice follow-up from the podcast we did earlier on impact measurement and management, which is still available to listen to. So Mike and Rebecca, a very warm welcome to you both.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Rosel.
Now, how to report on impact is a much debated topic within the impact investing industry. And well, we are very fortunate to have you in this podcast, Mike, to help us with that, as your company, Impact Frontiers, has been working on a set of impact reporting norms. Can you say a little bit what triggered your company to develop these norms? And more importantly, can you elaborate on the norms?
Absolutely. The trigger for this effort was actually a few years ago, a great report that came out from an organization called Bluemark, which did a research report on impact reporting. And they provided a very helpful service, in my view, of documenting that everybody hates impact reporting. The people who are writing reports find it burdensome and time-consuming and costly, and the people reading reports often find it not very useful anyway. And so it's just one thing that everybody can agree we dislike.
That's not very encouraging, Mike.
It's not very encouraging at all, but they found a little bit of hope, which is that they, first, it's hopeful that everybody agrees the current system is not working well for anybody. And actually, it seemed from that initial research like people also agreed on what might work better. And that's where Bluemark, which is a private sector impact verification provider, handed the baton to Impact Frontiers, which is a nonprofit public consultation and field building organization that can facilitate a sort of neutral public consultation to figure out what is it that we all agree we would like to see an impact performance report include, so that it doesn't come from one private sector entity, but rather from a nonprofit working on behalf of the sector. And long story short, that's what these impact performance reporting norms are. Probably the best way to explain them is to just unpack each word, impact performance reporting norm. Mm-hmm. So starting from back, by norms, we just mean something that's more flexible, less prescriptive than a standard. They're not a standard. They could eventually be handed off to a standard setter in the future. But here we mean something that's just a generally accepted way of doing things, but more flexible than a standard. By impact performance, we mean results on the ground. There's already tremendous progress happening, or that has already happened at impact investing, on what are the practices, what are the things that investors should do to manage performance, and people report on, are we doing those things? But now we're moving past practices to the results. And by reporting, we just mean something very specific, which is the document that an asset manager creates and sends to their investors to show what is the impact that was achieved.
And Rebecca, you obviously have seen the norms. Can you tell anything about your impression of these norms?
Yeah, sure. And I'm also just so happy and excited to speak to Mike about it and have this opportunity here. So, yeah, from our perspective at Triodos, we've been in the industry of impact investing for 30 years now, but only in the past few years or so have we started impact performance reporting on fund level. And I'll get to that in a little bit. So, but all along, we've made an attempt and we've integrated impact reporting alongside and integrated with financial reporting. But now our challenge is, okay, how do we raise the bar? How do we kind of stay ahead of the curve? I think improving our impact performance reporting is definitely one way to do that. And we also like to say that we finance change through our investing, but we also change finance. And here you see you know, Mike referred to the Bloomark report a few years ago. There's been a lot of developments in the last just few years, you know, the kind of definitions and really the infrastructure of the industry of impact investing is evolving and shaping up. It's really kind of growing up, getting legs. And of course, impact performance reporting is a core element of that. It's a necessary part of the definition of impact investing. And so they're kind of having this set of norms. And I like that also that they are not standards, but that does leave room for flexibility. Just helps to kind of keep investors on common ground. You know, so we started our impact reporting a few years ago, and we like to think that we set an example for others. But of course, investors are all looking at each other. You know, they're all comparing, oh, well, what are our peers doing? And then they like to follow each other. That just kind of happens naturally. So having this common set of norms helps to kind of get us all aligned on the same page, have the same understanding of what we're actually reporting and why.
I can definitely imagine. And it may seem quite easy to develop norms, particularly if they're quite flexible, as you say. But I'm sure it hasn't been an easy ride to develop these norms, Mike. And I also noticed that in the process, you've asked the input from the investor community by performing a public consultation. So was that consultation helpful? And were there things that came out of the consultation that were surprising?
That's right. The way we try to tackle these things, it's not to just find a small number of people in the room to think really deep thoughts and then announce the answer to everybody. Rather, the norms are like an edifice built of the bricks contributed by people all over the sector. And our role is to contribute those nuggets of insight and those good ideas that already exist in investors' mind and just consolidate them in one place where they can be available for everybody. As I mentioned, the first thing that was pleasantly surprising about the results of the public consultation was that it confirmed the impression that people largely agree what they would like to see in an impact performance report. So we're already in good ground as a sector.
Yeah, that's a good start.
It's a good start. I mean, in some sense, it would be a bad thing if this was technically something completely new that nobody had ever thought of before, right? In some ways, it's more like solving a coordination problem than announcing some big new technical advance. It's just getting everybody on the same page and helping them realize that they were all mostly on the same page to begin with. So we have that going for us. One of the things we tried was to even go further towards standardization and come up with a template or a table that everybody could fill it out, just make it as easy as possible. And people loved the idea of a standardized template to make it easy, but they couldn't agree what that standardized template should include. They couldn't agree on what should be the columns and what should be the rows. And it turns out that's too much standardization. So that's why we dialed back a little bit to say, this is the information that needs to be included. And we can go into that in a minute. But you have flexibility as to exactly what to include and how to present it. A few other things that really came through clearly, whether it was in the webinars that we did or in in-person workshops, and we did workshops in Tokyo, New York, London, in Latin America as well, very clear demand for representation of stakeholder voice. Mm-hmm. Everybody would love to see more representation of the voices of the people affected by investments in the impact report. People really embrace the idea of both qualitative and quantitative data and the way that those two can support one another in impact reports.
Yeah.
And finally, people really liked to look under the hood of individual investments rather than just looking at the portfolio level snapshot. Now, sometimes you have so many investments that it's hard to go one by one through 100 investments. But when possible, people really did want that granularity. So those are a few of the things that sometimes surprised or sometimes just, you know, were great to see come out of the consultation.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a really interesting process you've gone through. And Rebecca, if you look at the norms, how do they compare with how Triodos is currently reporting on impact?
Actually, quite similar. So the norms recommend starting with your impact thesis or your theory of change. That's something that we incorporated from last year. Also covering your process, so kind of looking under the hood and seeing what is your impact management process and how do you make investment decisions incorporating and based on impact. So for us, we have 7 funds in private debt and equity. So I think compared to some investors that report on impact on entity level, so looking at all of the investments in that investor's portfolio, we actually split fund by fund. And there we have a lot of diversity in our portfolio. So to what Mike said about grouping investees on aggregate level, those results, or looking investee by investee. For us, that depends on the size of the fund and the nature of the fund. But for all of our investments, we actually publish separately on our website. I really like the flexibility in the norms. And one kind of sticking point or challenge that we've had in discussion also within the EU when we're talking about regulation is how to define impact and, mm-hmm. and what is an impact investment, what is a sustainable investment. And we have separate podcasts on the regulation, which I also recommend. But that definition of a sustainable investment is also flexible, and that helps. So yeah, I think parts of our impact reports that we like to kind of add more flavor to, we try to also incorporate as much qualitative information as possible that sometimes doesn't stand out in the data. So we let the fund manager also write the foreword, which also provides kind of the operating context, what happened in the year that may not stand out in the data itself. And with each of our KPIs, we include an explanation year on year. So, and we'll get to that, I think, when we talk about KPIs.
Yeah, that's always a challenge, yeah? What you can capture in numbers and what do you have to express in words. Indeed, let's move to impact KPIs. Mike, you mentioned in our preparation talk that we had that it's very important to report on KPIs in reference to benchmarks or targets. Can you give an example? Are there any common pitfalls to be aware of, maybe?
I'm so happy to be on a podcast where we use the term KPI without defining it. We just assume that everybody knows what a KPI is.
That's this true. Is that maybe
I'm at home. I feel seen. But for the benefit of listeners, when we say KPI, we just mean a key performance indicator. So it's basically
thank
a metric.
Thank you, Mike.
I know that I'm truly in the home of the impact nerds now, and I'm very happy to be there. So much of the focus of impact reporting has been on standardizing our KPIs. You know, for as long as I've been in the sector, which is an embarrassingly long time now. And there is a challenge of course, if you have standardized KPIs, that makes your results more comparable so that somebody who's providing capital to a number of funds can compare, oh, this one, you know, had higher than that one. That can inform my investment decision, which is the long-term goal, of course. At the same time, sometimes those standardized KPIs don't quite fit.
Mm-hmm.
They don't quite represent the actual impact that real people are experiencing on the ground. And they necessarily have to be a simplification. And so there's that balance between standardization and relevance and faithful representation that you always have to mix, to balance. It's hard to get to a really good KPI that really represents impact the way that people are experiencing it. And when you do, that's the kind of KPI that really justifies managing towards and reporting. But since it's hard to get to those KPIs, there's also a lot of reporting on sort of not as good KPIs that are very understandable. This is a place you would start, just number of people reached, et cetera. But it ends up being a little bit performative. And so that's where a little bit of the qualitative and quantitative mixture comes in, which is like, well, this is what we can report now.
Yep.
This is the deeper view that we're not quite there yet.
And Rebecca, what is your response to this answer of Mike?
I agree. It's very difficult to set the right meaningful KPIs. I can give some examples and to put in context. So we've had some discussions internally recently since I joined Triodos 2 years ago on target setting. And there we've really struggled to also set meaningful targets. And I think, you know, the core of that is then the question, okay, well, if we can't find a meaningful target against this indicator, then is this the right indicator to really reflect the direction that we want to take the fund from an impact perspective? But I think some of those KPIs, they're also with each kind of reporting cycle or reporting year, investors and also asset managers become used to those KPIs and they become accepted, right? And they're also, we build an entire machinery around that KPI. So taking, again, I use microfinance before, I'll stick with it. In microfinance, we often count the number of clients or the number of borrowers. And we need to collect that information, at least in private markets, directly from our portfolio companies. So that means they also need to set up a system to keep track of that. And that's all a good thing. And they should naturally have that information. So that makes a nice KPI because they have the information and they can readily report it to us. But that also doesn't tell us everything, right? It doesn't tell us anything about those borrowers, if it's the first time they're accessing finance, if they're getting, you know, better finance, et cetera. So, or what even what changed in their life. And that's something that we want to kind of move towards. And we've talked about that in previous articles and podcasts, et cetera. But then also what happens if the numbers go down? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think in finance, of course, we think up is good, down is bad. We want our investments to go up. We want our impact to go up. So then does increasing the number of borrowers or, you know, decreasing, does that necessarily have the same meaning? And the answer is no. So, you know, not to a spoiler alert for our microfinance fund this year, but the number went down. But don't panic, because that doesn't mean there was less impact. That just means that the fund is pivoting, you know, changing strategy, perhaps making room for new investees. Some really successful exits also can contribute to that. And I think also the more history of reporting that we now have under our belt. So I think it's 3 or 4 years now. We can also then look at trends and then also say, okay, well, what is relevant to report here? Is it necessarily the cumulative number, or is it only in that year? And those are all decisions that we are making.
I think, Rebecca, you're very right in that the impact data itself can be completely meaningless if you don't understand what they represent, right? What is the underlying definition? How is it calculated? What does the data represent? And that's exactly the example that you gave for the microfinance fund. But that's also quite difficult to manage, right? Because then again, you need to provide the explanation with the numbers. Yeah, what is your response to that, Mike?
It's so important what Rebecca said of digging beneath the numbers and wrapping the context around them. It can be overwhelming and it can be confusing. And then, of course, the factors that are important for one investment are not the same for another investment. That said, I think we can learn something from the world of financial accounting here. And I never thought that I would say that at this point in my career. But if you look at the history of the way accounting calculated and reported financial results, they went through a phase of being deeply concerned with standardization of individual metrics. But then they found there were some things they couldn't standardize. So then they sort of backed up a little bit and said, you know what, let's agree. Can we agree on the concepts that need to be covered one way or the other? And I think that's what we see happening in impact evaluation and impact measurement and impact reporting as well, which is that even if we can't standardize all of the metrics, we can agree there are certain concepts that need to be covered one way or the other.
Yes.
So let's take an example. Mm-hmm. Being underserved, or even you could say historically excluded or marginalized. This is a concept that can pertain in the health sector with regards to health outcomes, it can pertain in education, it can pertain in nutrition. In all of these cases, the metrics would be different, but the concept of being underserved is the same. And those are the sort of concepts that we try to signal, even if the metric is different. Can you explain, maybe your number of people went down, but the degree to which they were underserved went up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can cover those
exactly.
All of those things in a consistent way, then it gives the user of the report, who is reading the report, a way to keep track of those contextual factors that are so important.
Yes, that's very true. What we do at Triodos Investment Management, we look at the Sustainable Development Goals. It's an important framework for us to measure our impact performance against. Mike, what do you say? How important do you think the Sustainable Development Goals are to include an impact performance reporting?
Using a thematic taxonomy like the Sustainable Development Goals or the Global Impact Investing Network's IRIS Plus thematic taxonomy, it can help make performance more comparable, because you can say, okay, if I'm interested in this issue, I can look for funds and work in that issue and compare the performance. So it makes life easier, I think, for report users. At the same time, referencing the Sustainable Development Goals by themselves, I think we heard from practitioners, is not enough. You would need to go further to say, okay, not only is this investment associated with clean water or whatever the goal is, but here's specifically what we did, which stakeholders we reached, how much the change was, and so forth. So it can be a useful framing mechanism, but then still there's a need to go deeper.
And Rebecca, why do we use the Sustainable Development Goals in our impact reporting?
We use them because investors ask us to. they ask us more and more, we hear this, how, to what extent does your portfolio contribute to the SDGs? Which SDGs and by how much? So they're really looking for percentages. And we are, at least on private debt and equity, proceeding with caution, using them as a communication tool, making sure that we have a robust kind of evidence-based rationale behind why we are aligning with certain SDGs, taking financial inclusion, for example. So, you know, we can assign specific KPIs, but that doesn't mean that we can necessarily measure the targets in the SDGs, which were developed in a policy environment and intended for government. So I think there's, I see more research papers coming out on coming up with a more scientific method for investors and for companies to align with the SDGs. But yeah, that's a work in progress.
Mike?
I can share. I mean, it's like anything. There's good and bad versions. As Rebecca said, so there's, you know, what people, it sounded like, didn't want was simply to tag the SDG with the colorful icon in your impact report, and then just have all of these colorful icons that make everybody feel good. That was what investors actually didn't want. That said, Rebecca, you used such a great word, which is your investors want to know how are you contributing to the SDGs, which actually implies all of that depth of information that you then described. And there actually are standards for investors that do want to do that. So the UNDP has created SDG impact standards for how investors that really wanted to link to the SDGs could implement practices and then report performance in a way that shows the depth of contribution for each SDG.
And we discussed in the podcast already comparing impact across funds. And I'm just wondering, Mike, is it necessary or even possible to compare impact between different fund products? Will we ever get there?
It might be impossible, but completely necessary. We might be doomed to choose. I mean, if you think about it, even if there were no impact reporting, we would still be making choices among funds. And even if there were poor impact reporting, we would still be making choices among funds. And those choices might reflect assumptions on our part or beliefs on our part that were unverified or simply values. And so the more we can take those things that are implicitly shaping our decision-making and make them explicit, recognize them, including recognizing their imperfections, but begin to improve, the hope is can gradually inform allocation of capital progressively towards higher and higher impact uses.
Yeah. This will also take time, right? Now that the norms are out and for Rebecca, our impact reports are published, what are your next steps? Mike, you first. What are you working on now?
But let's talk about time, because if you look at the history of accounting, it was 100 years plus. So I feel comfortable that we can take the time to get it right. So much of it is just addressing the coordination problem. And we always try to remind ourselves, you know, being technically correct is just the price of entry. You then have to spend two times as much socializing work, working out problems, getting people together to discuss and try new things out as you spent on the actual technical side of things in the first place. And so we'll be spending a lot of time this year and next year just convening investors to understand, could you try this out? How would it work for you? What did we get right? What would we need to be, you know, what would we need to change in the next version to make this really fit for purpose for fund managers like Triodos, which is already, of course, doing a great job, for development finance institutions, for multilateral development banks, for public equity funds?
Yeah.
How can we represent stakeholder voices? How can we use case studies? There's so many things that we can go further on. The goal for this round was just to get the skeleton in place, just to get the foundation in a suitable place that we can then build on in the future.
Yeah, and that's already a huge achievement, of course. And Rebecca, are you now going on a long holiday?
Yes.
To recover?
Yeah. No, definitely. First, we're going to have a party. Because let's
say impact report party.
I love that.
Yeah, we need to mark the milestone, because every year, like Mike said in the beginning, it is a lot of work. So I'm here representing as one person, but we're working with, many, many people on these impact reports to get them across the line. So it's the fund managers, the analysts, the marketing, the communications, et cetera, the design. So, everybody needs to just mark that moment. And I think we have a party. Next, we need to dig into reviewing the results and drawing key insights. And that's with the fund managers and, really trying to tease out, okay, well, what does this mean for the fund? And so to have that internal review moment. And we started doing that actually also last year. And that goes to what Mike was saying about, why do we do this? It's number one to report to our investors, but also for internal decision making and comparing across funds. So even though it's difficult, we do have some similar funds in our portfolio, both investing in renewable energy, for example, in different geographies. So how do we compare greenhouse gas emissions avoided in those funds, or, name the result that we want to look at and why and what's happening. And then third is, of course, improving our own infrastructure, improving our definitions and, the way that we control our data, et cetera. So I think those are the three things.
I don't want to spoil this party, but just
you're invited.
If we do fast forward, do you expect the impact reports next year to look very different from what they are this year?
That's a good question. Well, I think to Mike's point, that we want to reduce the workload, actually. So we want to have some consistency year on year. So I actually don't expect them to look that much different than they do this year. This year we added
some more efficiency there. Okay, interesting. Well, thank you so much, Mike and Rebecca. And thank you for listening to this episode. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify to make sure you don't miss any updates. And as always, we are happy to hear your feedback. Until next time.